All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week 7 edition of the show, as we have a 5-1 football team on our hands and Monday Night Football looming with a chance to go 6-1. Were the Bucks to do that, it would only be the second time they've ever been 6-1. 2021 was the other. But it is going to be a tall order against a good Detroit Lions team who comes into the game at 4-2. So thank you for joining us today. We've got a Friday edition of the show. I got a little backed up yesterday on Thursday when I normally would have put the show out. But we have an extra day because of Monday Night Football anyway. So that helps. And of course, it gives you the extra day all day on Monday if you want to listen to things, as we have a lot to cover. We'll go over, you know, the Niners game is in the rearview mirror now, but still things I want to mention there and look ahead to Monday night, as this Bucks team finally had a win. Not that it was easy, because it certainly was not, but at least it didn't literally come down to the final minute of the game, and they won by double digits and all that good stuff. So it was a little bit more relaxing, although hardly relaxing, with the 30-19 win over San Francisco. And I'll tell you what stood out to me the most, okay? I mean, well, the obvious was Baker Mayfield and the throws he was making, the throw to Tez Johnson especially, and the catch by Tez Johnson, which was a great fingertip catch. The 3rd-and-14 run is one of those Bucks plays. You know, last year against San Francisco, we all remember the play he made with Bosa in his face, and he was holding him off with one arm and rolling to his right and still made a throw to pick up a crucial fourth down. Bucks ended up losing that game, though. This year, outdid himself with a 3rd-and-14 scramble where first it looked like he was going to be sacked just right off the bat. That didn't happen. But even after he got loose, it was like, okay, well, whatever. He's going to get a few yards here, but he's not actually going to get the first down or anything like that. And I even said, I'm watching the game here at my house with my son, and my wife and daughter were here too. And as he's running, I just blurted out, no effing way he's getting this. And this is when he's about like 5 yards into the 3rd-and-14 run. And he kept dodging guys, and he kept, you know, slipping through. And then, of course, he finally gets hit a few yards shy. Then he just wills himself to the first down. And, I mean, and the thing about Mayfield, like, he's not actually, he doesn't look like that great of a runner. Like, he's not, like, one of these guys that's, like, a threat with his legs. He's hardly Lamar Jackson or anything like that. But he really does have a knack for just getting it done in those situations. And, you know, we remember plays like that. He doesn't actually get it every time, but it feels like he gets it every time. And got the first down there, kept that drive alive. A lot of guys played well against San Francisco. I'll say this. There was some very encouraging things, a few discouraging things as well. First of all, I'm not saying this was the best of all the players, but I want to mention him first because I said this was my main concern going into the game against San Francisco last week, and that was Servacia Dennis. So I was thinking about, and we talked about it on the show, Christian McCaffrey hasn't been exactly lighting the world up as a running the ball threat, even though he's a running back, but as a pass-catching running back, he's been really, really good this year. And that combined with the Bucs in general, the Bucs defense difficulties in reining in receivers out of the backfield worried me. And in particular, Servacia Dennis, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, like I'm trying to imagine, because sometimes he looks like he's running around in circles out there, and that's against regular guys. He's going to have a hell of a time against McCaffrey. And you know what? He did pretty well. I mean, he's been doing well in run defense all year, pass defense not so much. But he did a pretty okay job, even better than pretty okay. He did a solid job against McCaffrey. And McCaffrey caught a few, but Dennis was there. Several times I saw McCaffrey make a catch, and Dennis right there didn't let up a lot of run after catch. Nothing got out of control, which is all you're really asking. And so I wanted to mention him first because I was really impressed with the game he had. Same with Kendall Vildor. Vildor is not, I know the interception in the opening play or opening series of the game was one thing, which, by the way, like, did his legs, like, not work or what? Like, I know everybody, and he even tweeted about himself saying if anybody has some cleats he can buy, he wants to get some new cleats. But he picked the ball off, and I'm yelling, pick six, pick six, you know. And then he falls down once, but he still gets up, and it happened 3 times. And after the 3rd one, he, like, just gave up. He's like, I'm just, you know what, I'm just falling on this in the fetal position. And ended up being all right. The Bucks scored a touchdown anyway. But besides that, that's an interception. That's the stuff you remember. But he was solid throughout the day. Like, he did a good job in that game. And the Bucks do, we'll talk about the injury situation, the Bucks do get Zion McCollum back this week. It looks like he's been practicing, and this is as of Friday, not even Thursday, so it's a pretty good sign. But Vildor did a nice job in that game on Sunday, and I thought he deserved some mention. I thought Tyke Smith did a really nice job. There was the one screen pass, and it looked like there was a convoy of blockers out there for San Francisco, and he kind of split through and kind of shot through there and made a tackle on what should have been a first down. They ended up punting, and he made a few plays. I'm really impressed. Not just Sunday, but Tyke Smith has been. And I thought he would be, you know, this year when they were able to, you know, say, okay, we're going to make you, not make you, but I mean, focus more on playing safety is probably a better way to put it. And he has delivered. So I wanted to mention him as well. And then, you know, what can you say about what this Bucks offense is doing? And it wasn't a great day to start for them. They started out a little slow, as they have been a few times this year. But I never want to be make excuses guy. And I never want to be, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I never want to be qualifying the same thing over and over with injuries and all that, because they are what they are and it's what you have to deal with. But what the Bucks offense is doing, just even if they were completely healthy, is very good, first of all. They got one of the better offenses in the league, but particularly with what they've had to deal with. And you look at Tez Johnson making plays, Cameron Johnson making plays out there. Sterling Shepard had another solid game. Guys, those three are Buccaneer wide receivers 5, 6, and 7. And they were just fine. They did just fine. Better than fine. They did really, really well. And, you know, same thing with the offensive line. The offensive line, Greg Allman tweeted this. The Bucs have had 5 different starters at guard, 4 different starters at tackle, 2 different centers, and they've allowed 10 sacks this year, which is on pace for a full season total of 28. They allowed 40 last year, all right? And they're doing better with a different combo every week. This week, everything should be as settled as it's been in a while. I mean, it's not. You're still having the right side of the offensive line. But yet, now they've got some guys back at right guard. Luke Haggard is out, but they're also possibly going to have Mike Jordan back. Either way, there'll be some combination of people up there at right guard, and they've been getting it done. It hasn't been pretty all the time, especially on the right side, but Charlie Heck's been serviceable enough, and whoever there's been at guard, which has been multiple people, has done well. And, I mean, these guys are in the coaching staff, the offensive coaching staff. What a hell of a job of keeping Baker Mayfield. And I thought that, you know, and Mayfield certainly does a lot for them with his legs and not just running like he did on the 3rd and 14, but also just there's been, what, it feels like 10 times this year where he's had arms wrapped around him and you assume sack and he slips out or dips his shoulder or steps through or something and doesn't do it. So it's a full team effort. But with the injuries they've had, like I said, you've got receivers 5, 6, and 7 that were doing it on Sunday after Abuka went out with the hamstring injury. Abuka is pretty likely not to play. He could play against the Saints, of course, with the bye after that. I wouldn't be surprised. But Mike Evans is supposed to be back. So, and like I said, we'll go over the injuries in a few minutes, but on Sunday, they were down to their 5th, 6th, and 7th to start the year, at least, receivers. And all three of those guys did a really good job. And who else? Jamel Dean got a sack, first ever career sack. He's been playing some of the best football of his career. And he always was good when he was healthy. His thing was just staying healthy, which at any moment, you know, something could happen, obviously. But when he's healthy and he's out there, he's been really good. So here's my thing with Sunday, the pass rush. Now, the Bucs got a bunch of sacks. They had a boatload of sacks on Sunday. I actually still think that was not even one of their better games pressure-wise. And just like the week before in Seattle, when they couldn't get anything done against Sam Darnold, and finally Todd Bowles dialed up a blitz at the very end of the game and it got them the game-changing interception, it was still Bowles scheming something up that I think changed things. In the first half, you can even go to my Twitter feed, at Bobby Game Day, BobbyGameDay, Bobby Game Day. You can get me on Twitter anytime. Same with Blue Sky. For that matter, email BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. I love hearing from you guys, and I still have fridge schedules. But you can go to my Twitter, at Bobby Game Day and see, like, in the first half, I was like, well, Haason Reddick, he looks practically washed up. He's a non-factor. Diaby's one of those guys who's a good depth guy, but he's not a guy who you can rely on, blah, blah, blah. And I actually did feel that way. I'm still not sure I don't feel that way. So they got it going a little bit in the second half, but the Bucks are not getting pressure with four. They're just not. And Mac Jones was chowing down early in the game. And Todd Bowles called four blitzes in the first half, courtesy of John Ledyard, the numbers here, who's another good Twitter follow. Not just for the Bucks, but football in general. Four in the first half, and then 11 second half blitzes. Not every blitz was because, or not every one of the pressures and sacks was because of the blitz. But yeah, there was a marked and noticeable difference in the second half with the pressure the Buccaneers were able to apply. And it made a big difference. It changed the course and the tenor of that game. They started getting to Mac Jones. They started not just getting the sacks, but forcing throws early and forcing wayward throws and things like that. And, I mean, I always say this. Whenever I approach anything related to X's and O's, or questioning coaching staffs or strategy, especially when it's X's and O's stuff, because that's in particular a thing that, you know, I know these guys, I always say it, they have forgotten more football in the last 10 minutes than I'll ever know in my life. So Todd Bowles has his reasons, but he's so good at dialing up those blitzes. Like, why do they wait so long? And why do we have to watch the Bucs defense get picked apart? What feels like them getting, I know they only gave up 19 points at the end, but like they were getting, you know, like they were giving up a lot in the first half, especially. And then we can't get any pressure, no pressure. It's just, I mean, Mac Jones is just out there with no concerns. And all of a sudden, yeah, they start getting creative. They scheme it up instead of relying on their front four, and they get it. It's like, I know you can't just, oh, hey, do that good thing, just do that all the time. I know it doesn't work that way in life. But that's what I'm left there thinking, because I'm still concerned. It's a 5-1 team, and they may be 5-2, they may be 6-1 after Monday night, I'm not even sure. But that's not the point. The point is, even as good as they are, to get where we all hope they want to get where we know they want to get, it's going to take more when you're rushing four. You can't blitz all the time. They've done a good job working around it. They've won some close games, and they've gotten to this point at 5-1. But both just to continue what they're doing in the regular season and to win this division, first of all, it's going to take more. Atlanta's not going away. You saw Monday night. Thanks a lot, Bills, by the way. Josh Allen, not, hey, don't talk to me right now about anybody besides Bake, all right? I'm not one of these guys that even care. I don't care about all this MVP talk. I think it's ridiculous that we get into it so much in week 7 or 6. We'll know more by the week teens, you know? But, yeah, the offense came up small for Buffalo the other night. So anyway, Atlanta is not going away. They're going to be a tall order. And the Bucs are very, very fortunate, by the way. They got that first win in Atlanta because that was by the hair of their chinny chin chin. And if you don't even change anything else about this season, but Atlanta wins that game or the ball bounces one. I mean, that game literally came down to one bounce, one weird angle, one randomness, okay? And all of a sudden, they're what, 3 or what are they? Yeah, they'd be like 4-1. They had their bye already. We'd be 4-2. They'd have a tiebreaker. It'd be a whole thing. I mean, like very, very fortunate the Bucs got that win in Atlanta. And that game in December is already looming large. But it's going to be tough. The Bucs have hardly wrapped up anything right now. And even if they do end up winning the division, and even if they do, I mean, right now they're the number one in the NFC. You know, it doesn't matter right now this early. But my point is, even if they were to hypothetically get a first-round bye and all this good stuff, I'm concerned that when it matters in January, and January is what really matters here, all right, are they going to be able to get after it with four enough to where Todd Bowles doesn't have to call a blitz every other down? We have no idea, you know, looking that far ahead, what things will be like, but I'm still concerned about it. And like I said, I know the final numbers were a lot better. They got more sacks, they got more pressures, but I don't think pressure-wise that was even one of their better days. If you watched like a play-by-play breakdown of their edge guys, namely Reddick and namely Diaby, who are still not doing enough. And I'm not even saying they're not doing enough, they are what they are. But, I mean, the Bucs don't have enough in that department. And that's the one concern that keeps gnawing at me over and over. But as that keeps gnawing at me, the Bucs also keep winning football games. So, you know, We'll see. Like I said, Detroit on Monday night. Let's talk about that a little bit. They pose some issues. Now, they've been having issues defensively, too, and they're without Brian Branch. You saw that whole fiasco after the game on Sunday Night Football where he goes trying to start a brawl in the post-game handshake. He got suspended for one game. He's out. They've got other injuries in their secondary on top of that. So even though, yes, the Bucs have receiving injuries, they've got secondary injuries. So that will help. And their defense, if you look at the Lions, every team they've played has scored at least 21 points on them except the Browns, who are an atrocity. And, I mean, even the Bears scored 21 points. Everyone else has scored, you know, 30 or more. I think they had, 24. One other team scored 24. Lions are 1-2 versus teams with a winning record. They got blown out in Green Bay to start the season, beat the Bears in a blowout, and then lost at Kansas City. And I'm not being critical of them for this. I'm just saying, you know, they're 1-2 against teams with a winning record, and they've got a 3-0 record against some weaker teams. And they've been giving up points. Meanwhile, the Bucs, I'm putting some things in the Bucs corner here. The Bucs have wins over 1, 2, 3 teams with a winning record. And even though their defense doesn't seem like it's awesome, they've actually been holding teams, with the exception of Seattle and with the exception of Philadelphia. I know the Jets scored 27, but that was a block field. They've been holding teams around 20 points or less. So this is a game the Bucs can win. Here's what, and Todd Bowles talked about this earlier in the week, and this reached me. You know, most of the stuff, these press conferences and these quotes you read on the internet or you read on in the newspaper, whatever, they're just people filling article space or whatever. But this reached me. And then on JoeBucsFan.com, this article was up there. Actually, let me pull it up real quick. Because I actually thought, hey, he's speaking to me right now. This is earlier in the week on JoeBucsFan.com. Todd Bowles says the team has changed its mentality to one more befitting of a Super Bowl team. And this is a quote now from Bowles. I think the mental toughness has gotten a lot better this year, Bowles said. This is also before they beat San Francisco. We've kind of embraced the grind. You know, playing the first place schedule, players used to look at this as playing all these teams in a row as a burden. Now our guys look at it as a challenge. And it doesn't matter who plays. I think they understand the assignment to get where we got to get is going to be a lot of different people every week. And that's what the good teams do, and that's what we're trying to become. So we're kind of embracing the challenges week in and week out, and guys are really stepping up and maturing, and we've got a great locker room leadership, and their resiliency is outstanding. Then Joe went on to say, this is Joe in the article, despite the Bucs having the best record in the NFC, a lot of Bucs fans are still penciling in losses for the team and figuring at least a few more are coming. Perhaps that needs to change too. And I stand corrected, this was after they beat San Francisco. And I was like, you know what? I was nodding my head. I was like, you're right, and I'm guilty of it. I was thinking this whole time watching the San Francisco game Sunday, especially as they were closing it out at the end, man, just they really need to hold on to this one. This gives them a little less pressure because Detroit's going to be tough. There's a good chance they lose. But if they win this one, it's kind of okay if they lose. I didn't say it out loud, but I thought it. I said, if they win this one, now all they have to do is beat the Saints before the bye, and they'll be 6-2. Going into the bye. And that's still, I do believe that. But you know what? Who says we have to assume, oh, we're up against it Monday? Detroit's sitting over there saying the same thing, right? Why, you know, who says we have to sit there and be the sub and be submissive and be like roll over on our back and expose our belly like when you go to pet a dog who's an underdog, as they say. We don't have to do that. The Bucs could win. Why can't they? And again, I'm not predicting they might go out there and get slammed now that I'm saying this. But, yeah, we don't have to think, okay, well, that's going to be too tough, and I don't know if they can do that. Todd Bowles is right. I'm glad to hear that, and I hope they think of it that way. And, yes, the Bucs have won the division 4 years in a row. That means for 4 years in a row. And the whole schedule thing can be a little overrated sometimes. You play 17 games. 14 of the 17 are fixed in perpetuity due to the scheduling cycle. Only 3 are determined by you're finishing from last year. So, and 3 games is not nothing. But yeah, for 4 years in a row now, the Bucs have had to play every single division winner in the NFC because you always play one division in the NFC and then you play the other division winner because you finish first too. So you're going to play every division winner in the NFC. And then your other thing is you play a division winner in the AFC because that's your extra AFC game. So you're going to be playing all these division winners every year as long as you're a division winner. I hope it happens again next year. And they've stepped up. And so, yeah, here's another one Monday night. Here's a game where we could have been playing maybe the Bears or the Vikings or somebody, but we're playing the Lions because of the Bucs NFC South championship last season. And that's fine. Bucs went up there to Detroit last year, and they won early in the season in what was a really big win. They can certainly do it again this year, but even if they don't, like I said, they're an underdog on Monday. I get it. They're, whatever it is, 5.5 points, I think, and that's fine. But either way, yeah, we should change the mentality. I mean, there's no reason to think, oh, well, hey, now it's not that big of a deal. They can lose, even if that's true. It is true, though. Like, they had lost to San Francisco. It's amazing. You can be so good, and, they were, what were they? Well, now they're 5-1. So they were 4-1 going into that game. That's really good, right? It would have been totally excusable to slip up, and they'd be 4-2 instead of 5-1. But if they were, now you'd be thinking, oh, man, dude, pressure's on. We lose in Detroit. Now we're 4-3. Oh, my God. We're like, that's like barely, that's almost 500, you know? After all the work they've done to get this far, they're barely over 500 if they had lost that San Francisco game. So now they're not in that position if things do go south on Monday night. But yeah, there's no reason to think that they have to. Certainly Detroit's offense has been humming. They have not missed a beat since Ben Johnson left as the offensive coordinator to go over to head coach of the Bears. And they've got some threats. Jared Goff playing really well. Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, the running backs are as much of a threat as they've ever been. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, the receivers, and of course Sam Laporta is a threat at tight end. I mean, it's going to be tough. But their defense, let me say, they're over there saying the same things about their defense, maybe worse than we've said about ours. Because they haven't really stopped a whole ton of people a whole lot of the time so far this season. So I don't know what the final score is going to be. I have a feeling the Bucs will have to score some points to win this. I don't think it's going to be like it was, what was it last year, 20-14? It was one of those type of games. It was real low scoring. I think this one's a little different on Monday night, but I know it'll be fun. And I'm pumped, and I love the Bucs on Monday night. Like I always say, I won't tell the whole story like I do every year for the first Monday night game, but I always romanticize Monday night football having grown up in the 80s and 90s when the Bucs never played on it. So I always thought of it as some mystical thing. And now they play on it pretty routinely. But it'll never not be special. And this is, again, one of those nights where there's two Monday night football games. And the Bucs are the early one. So it's a 7 p.m. start instead of 8:20. So a lot of you guys out there, I know there's a lot of people that don't like late games and things like that. And even me, I mean, I personally don't care. But now that I watched with my kids, I hate telling my kid in the third quarter of like a tight game, hey, go to bed. You know, I'm not going to do that. But I also don't like them going to bed after midnight. So this way they can, you know, watch the game and have a pretty normal night. And it's all good. 7 p.m., you get ABC instead of ESPN, so more eyeballs. Network's always going to get more eyeballs than cable, even ESPN, who almost everybody has. It's not the same. So I like them being on ABC. You'll get Buck and Aikman in the booth. The injuries, like I mentioned before. So today's Friday. Since it's a Monday night game, there's the extra day, and I have an extra day's worth of information. It's 2:15 as I record this right now. And practice today. Zion McCollum back, like we talked about. Benjamin Morrison back, so the secondary's going to get some help. Still no Bucky Irving, no Chris Godwin, they're out, and then no Luke Haggard, the guard. So they're going to have to fill in at guard, like we talked about, Mike Jordan or somebody like that. And Amika Buka actually was out there at practice today, but he is on the side. He's just kind of out there doing light stuff, but he's not, even though he was there, he's not playing. Mike Evans was not out there today, but he is playing, it looks like. Mike Evans usually has a scheduled day off every week, and this was it. So the fact that he wasn't there today is not a worry. He's supposed to play on Monday night. In fact, he was out there at practice yesterday, and it was Thursday, and he was used to the regular routine of a Sunday game, so he came out in all his pads, and then all the players were like, "Whoa, yo, no, it's just shirts and shorts today," and he had to go back in and get all his pads off. But he was out there, and he should be good to go on Monday. Levante David also didn't practice, but again, that's scheduled body maintenance stuff. He doesn't do a ton of the practice stuff. You know, it's not unusual for him to miss. So that's the injury report right now, and so, you know, as long as they can get through these next couple games without anything like bad happening, which who knows, then you've got the bye. They should be able to come back off the bye. I think, decently healthy for everything that's happened. Obviously, the guys that are out for the year are out for the year, like Kancey and like Cody Mauch. Lou Gehrke, by the way, Joe tweeted this on the Joe Bucks fan Twitter account. Lou Gehrke, I mean, he's still not back yet, and there probably won't even be an update on him until he comes back to practice, whenever that is. But Joe said Gehrke was in the locker room wearing sandals, no wrap on his foot, no crutches, no brace, nothing, just walking around looking like a normal person. So whatever it is that's holding him out, it's got to be close to getting decently better. Now, walking around is not the same as doing explosive athletic movements and sticking your foot in the ground to stand up against Aiden Hutchinson rushing off your right shoulder. That's probably why he's not playing yet. But, I forgot Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah, he's still there. He's still there against, you know, our backup right side of the offensive line. So I know that, like I already just said, the Lions defense has had a few issues, but they may not have that. I'm still worried about that. And I don't think it'll be a repeat of what we saw with him getting, you know, 45 sacks against Justin School or anything like that. But still, it's a concern. You keep an eye on that for this weekend. But, you know, other than that, hopefully, like I said, they can get through this one. Maybe Ibuka plays against the Saints, maybe not. Either way, forget everything I said before about, hey, split these two games and you're 6-2 at the bye. That's the bare minimum. Yes, that still would not be bad. And if that happens, I'll be fine with it. But hey, let's go hunting for bigger game here. Let's get to 6-1 for the second time in franchise history. Hey, maybe even 7-1's on the table. Who knows? And if they end up not being able to make anything happen on Monday night, at least what they've done. I mean, we looked at that four-game stretch that they had, you know, before they started against Philadelphia. Philadelphia at home, at Seattle, San Francisco at home, at Detroit. And if with the old way of thinking before what Todd Bowles said earlier this week, you said to yourself, hey, you know, go 2-2 in that stretch and beat the Saints. And, you know, now, hey, that's not bad. Then you're 6-2. Well, they've already gone 2-1 in that stretch. So, yeah, they could still go 2-2, but they could also go 3-1. Let's get greedy. If nothing else, they've the whole October thing, remember how we were talking about the October swoon that seems to have been kind of built in to the Bucs schedule against, you know, or since Todd Bowles became the head coach, and a lot of that was scheduling, but this part of the schedule is tough now too, and the Bucs already have two October wins, which is a lot more than they can say in past years. So now we look to Monday night. Have some fun with it. I'm having a get-together. I don't know who's coming yet, but like always, don't just sit there alone. The primetime games are fun. They're special. I know it's a work night, but it's an earlier kickoff. Have fun with it. I want to thank you for listening either way. Be safe. Have fun this weekend. Get together with friends. I want to thank the Joes for giving me this platform. JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, anywhere for Buccaneer coverage. Thanks to them for getting me the opportunity to get in front of you. So I'll have a great weekend, hopefully, watching a lot of football. Weather's getting nice. It's a little more crisp, a little more autumnal. Enjoy all that as well, and hopefully next week we'll be back here talking about a 6-1 football team. But either way, we will be back here. And until then, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks. Stay.